Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Ding U here at The Athletic, presented by BetMGM. I am Michael Beller. I will be hosting Ding U. We are super excited for this. We're going to be covering the NCAA tournament right here all the way through the championship game. From every possible angle, we are going to have a heavy bet focus on the betting world, thanks to our friends at BetMGM. We're going to talk about On Court at the Sportsbook, every single thing that will help you get your brackets right, help you get your bets right, at least we hope so, getting yourself all the way through the NCAA tournament. I will be joined every single episode by my co-host, Brian Bennett. And Brian, a year ago at this time, you and I were lamenting a tournament that we did not have after we had led up to it for so many weeks with our podcast. Now here we are 1 year later, getting the NCAA tournament that we are so, so excited for. Very happy to be doing this with you, my friend.
So thrilled. It's always been my favorite week of the year, and to have it be taken away last year really makes me appreciate it more. I got my giant bracket on the wall behind me. I am so ready for this. Let's tip it off and let's talk about it.
Yeah, that bracket makes me feel like, past years where I've actually been on site covering the tournament. You always see those brackets, you know, back in the media area. Obviously, we are not there this year, but still enjoying it the way that we can. Now, we've got a great show for you here, and we are going to start out by considering some Final Four and National Championship odds, region by region. Again, these are coming to us from BetMGM. And Brian, let's start with the region that gives us the number one overall seed. That is the West region, where we find Gonzaga not only as the obvious favorite, but as the only team at the start of the tournament that has minus odds to win its region. You see right there, minus 175 before you get down to Iowa at plus 650. And then a couple of plus 1,000s, 10-1 on Kansas and Virginia. You actually come back down to plus 800 for Creighton. You see the 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10s as well. When you look at this region, I mean, Gonzaga is obviously the favorite, and for good reason, but could you make a value-based argument for anyone else here?
Yeah, I'm not going to bet against Gonzaga here because not only are they the best team, but they've already beaten Iowa, Virginia, and Kansas handily, and I don't really see the rematch changing that. However, if I were going to make a bet, and it would be a strict value play, and that would be on Oregon, the number 7 seed. You know, that's a team that was playing really well down the stretch. They did get upset by Oregon State in the Pac-12 tournament, but I don't think we should base all our decisions on one outcome. Oregon State obviously was playing very well down the stretch, but Oregon, always a team that's difficult to play this time of year. Dana Altman with a lot of switching defenses. You know, Will Richardson coming back for them has made them a really dangerous club. And as a 7 seed, that means they'd be down on the other side of the bracket. Maybe could get to the Elite Eight, and then you take your chances with an upset. So with those odds, what is it, 1,600? If I were going to make any kind of bet, that's where I put my money.
It's an interesting bet, and we have seen an Oregon team that has, over the last few years, right, get stronger and stronger in the second half of the season, and it was a similar path that team followed this year. I really do find it very, very hard to go against Gonzaga, even from the standpoint of trying to find value. If I were going to do it, the team that I would look at would actually probably be Iowa, only because I just don't think there's any slowing down Gonzaga's offense. I think if you were going to beat them, if someone ends up beating them over these next 3 weeks, it's going to be a team that can score with them. You're going to have to put up, I think, 80 plus in a game to beat Gonzaga. And Iowa's the team that can do that. They did that against Gonzaga earlier in the season. Of course, Gonzaga scored like 97 in that game. Yeah. So Iowa was unable to win it, but they can score with Gonzaga when they are at their A game. So that's the team that I would look at here. And, you know, as tempting as it is to take what feels like an easy bet on Gonzaga, minus 175, just doesn't feel right. Any team is just one bad shooting night away from losing in the NCAA tournament. So the minus 175, hard to get to on Gonzaga. Let's throw it over to the South region, where Baylor, the number one seed, is coming in at plus 100 to make the Final Four. Then we've got Ohio State at plus 600, a group of teams at plus 1,000 that includes not only the 3, 4, and 5 seeds, Arkansas, Purdue, and Villanova, but also number 8, North Carolina. That's interesting to me, if only because even if they win that first round game against Wisconsin, then they're faced right up against Baylor. So it's interesting to see them coming in at plus 1,000 with such better odds than what we see from Florida, who would have to have, you know, a seemingly easier path going up against Ohio State should they get past Virginia Tech in that first round matchup. Let's talk about the same thing here, Brian. Baylor, the obvious favorite, but can you make a value-based argument for anyone else to get out of the region?
Yeah, it's similar to Gonzaga. You know, I wouldn't bet against Baylor in this region if I didn't have to, but if I'm looking for value, I think there's a lot of good value picks in this region. I like Texas Tech at plus 800. You know, they kind of up and down at times this year, but obviously with that defense of Chris Beard, you know, last time we saw a tournament, they were in the title game in overtime. So that's a team I think could make a run, especially that defense could really gobble people up. Now, that the problem is, do they end up playing Baylor? Baylor would be very familiar with that. But if there's some upsets along the way, I could see that. I could see Arkansas plus 1,000. That's a pretty tasty number for me. Really talented team. Played extremely well down the stretch. Obviously lost LSU in the SEC tournament. But, you know, before that had won 12 straight SEC games. So a team coming in with a lot of confidence. So, and even Purdue, I think, you know, if they could get hot, I think they're a bit too young. And in fact, I may be picking them to get upset here later on the show. But I think there are some good value plays, and even Ohio State at plus 600 for a two seed. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, for a two seed that just nearly won the Big Ten tournament. They beat Michigan, of course, without Isaiah Livers, and then push Illinois and almost win that game too. So Ohio State, you know, very high ceiling playing their way onto the two line. I think that's where there is some value in this one. I have trouble trusting Arkansas's offense. You know, it's a very high-powered offense when it is going right, but we've seen some up and down from them this season. Purdue's going to be awesome next year. We're going to be talking about them as one of the favorites next year when we get our, you know, first way too early top 25s. Purdue's going to be in there, but I think maybe a year ahead of schedule. Keep on throwing your questions into the chat. We will be taking those as we go along in this show. For now, however, let's move on into the Midwest region where we do find the Big Ten champions, at least the Big Ten tournament champions. And down in Champaign, they would tell you the outright Big Ten champions across the board, plus 150 to win this region. Then we've got Houston at plus 500, West Virginia plus 600, Oklahoma State, the interesting one, coming in at plus 400. Obviously, this is a team that surged down the stretch. Cade Cunningham is a couple of months away from being the number one overall pick in the draft, and you see the rest of this region here. But Oklahoma State's the most interesting one, I think, to talk about here, Brian. Interesting to see them as the four and West Virginia as the three in this region, especially with bracketing principles. Feels awfully easy for the committee to have flipped those two, make Oklahoma State the three, West Virginia the four, and give us the possibility of Io Desunmu against Cade Cunningham in the Elite Eight. Now that's looking like a Sweet 16 matchup if all the matchups hold here, but that's where I would go in this region. Even though I think Illinois is the best team for sure, getting those plus odds on a team like Oklahoma State has me really intrigued. Where are you at in this one?
Yeah, and looking at Oklahoma State as the number two betting choice in this region tells you that the committee really screwed up with its seeding. I mean, they really should have been a three seed. I thought they had a chance to be a two seed if they would have beaten Texas in the Big 12 tournament title game. For them to be a four seed is just absurd. They had the second most quad one wins in the country behind Illinois. For them to be a four seed and then perhaps play Illinois is pretty crazy. And you talk about Brad Underwood could maybe play Loyola Chicago in the second round in his old school Oklahoma State in the Sweet 16. I'm sure he's thrilled about that. But West Virginia with a special talent, number one overall pick in Cade Cunningham. I'm sorry, Oklahoma State with them. Certainly would be the team to go here if you're looking for a little bit of value. Although plus 400 for a four seed is not all that great a value.
And you talk about Loyola, too, with the season that they had dominating the Missouri Valley and then getting a very tough draw. Tough draw for both of those teams. Yeah. Loyola and Georgia Tech having to face one another in the first round. Those are two teams with some second weekend juice, and one of them is going to go out after one game. So that'll be among the best games of the first round. Finally, let's take a look at the East region here. Michigan at plus 175. Look, you're not going to get great odds on a one seed, but if Isaiah Livers is good to go, if they can survive this first weekend and Isaiah Livers is good to go for the Sweet 16, plus 175 feels very good on Michigan. Alabama at plus 400. We know what the deal is with that team. One of the best offensive teams in the country, and Herb Jones, one of the best takeover players in the country. A lot of love for both Texas and Florida State. We see them coming in at plus 550 and plus 500 respectively. Very little love for the Colorado Buffaloes coming in at plus 1200, 6 through 10. You can see there on the screen. UConn at plus 800. We know what James Bouknight means for that team, giving us maybe some memories of Shabazz Napier in years past. Has them at plus 800 with better odds to come out of this region than BYU, than Colorado. It's a really fun region. It's a really interesting region. Where are your eyes drawn to when you look at that chart?
Yeah, this is my favorite region by far of the four, you know, especially because it's just so wide open with the liver situation. But boy, I love Texas. Texas is my dark horse national title contender. Mm-hmm. You may see me pick them in the Final Four here in a few minutes, plus 550. I think that's a pretty good number. They'd have to go through Alabama and maybe Michigan, so that would be tough. But the way they're playing, all their athleticism, they're tough. They got a good veteran guards. That's a team I really have a shine for at this point. And then Florida State at plus 500, a team no one's really going to want to match up with because of their mm-hmm. size, their length, their athleticism, their depth. They have had some issues. They have given up, you know, a lot of turnovers in some games, especially against Georgia Tech. So you wonder if they can win four in a row against good competition. But those two would be my the way I would go just for the value and for the teams you're getting.
Yeah, that's where I get into a little bit of trouble with Florida State, a team that I just have trouble trusting their three-weekend-long consistency. And that's why even though I think plus 500, just based on their talent alone and just the style of play that they're going to bring is interesting, is intriguing. I have trouble trusting them to win these four games to get to the Final Four. And again, as I said, if Isaiah Livers is back, I think we're going to be looking at plus 175 for Michigan as pretty friendly odds to the better. Of course, we're going to be making that decision semi-blind as we get ready for the start of the first couple of rounds of the NCAA tournament. Please keep on sending your questions. We are happy to take all of them. Bracket, betting, futures, whatever it might be, populate the YouTube chat with those questions. We will get to them throughout the show. For now, however, we are going to bring on one of our partners over at BetMGM, Jason Scott. Jason is the VP of trading at BetMGM. Basically, we're looking at the head odds maker for BetMGM out in Las Vegas. Jason, thanks so much for joining us today.
Afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
We are doing great. We are very excited. I know you must be as well, getting ready for a tournament that starts 24 hours later than we are used to. We're not going to get that Thursday to Sunday feel that we love. It's a Friday to Monday feel this year, but still very happy to get it going. Selection Sunday, just a couple of days ago, revealing the field of 68 and all the matchups. And as Brian and I were just talking about, all the Final Four and championship futures that we've seen, with those now out there for a couple of days, which teams have you seen getting the most action in the futures market?
It's two-way traffic. It was three-way traffic, but Isaiah Livers' injuries means we're not seeing much money for Michigan. But we're only laying Illinois and this is Gonzaga. It makes sense, Illinois. They're sort of, you know, the plus 600, plus 700. The team that's on the roll. They've got the big guy. They've got the closer. And Gonzaga, you know, as you mentioned before, they've beaten the other top, all the other number one seeds. They've had one game under double figures. It makes sense that they're going to be popular. As a bookmaker, laying plus 200 for a team to win six games makes sense. But then you look at it from the other angle, who's going to beat them?
Yeah, and Jason, what are some of the most popular upset picks that you're seeing so far this week?
Yeah, it's very similar. People love momentum. And Georgetown have been the best back, to both at the money line and plus 4.5 coming, or it was plus 5 down to plus 4.5 coming out of the tournament win. And to a lesser degree, but still reasonably popular, Utah State. They've sort of been around plus 5. We've had plenty of money. And there is a trickle, obviously, on the back of the COVID situation, that perhaps Eastern Washington can pull off a huge upset against Kansas, given the upheaval. From what I understand, the guys in Kansas are sort of traveling on the late. Whether they're practicing, nobody knows. I think that's a Hail Mary, but we're certainly seeing a trickle of money there.
Yeah, they're not the only high seed dealing with that as well. Virginia also, and they, I'm assuming, are getting a little bit of flack coming in against them with Ohio, a team that, and Jason Preston has a guy that writes the right formula for a underdog to make a little bit of a run here, a superstar who can definitely put his team on his back. Let's go back up to the top of the field here. The four number one seeds, obviously, they've got the shortest championship odds. They're followed then by a trio of two seeds, Iowa, Ohio State, and Alabama. Right there with those two seeds is an Oklahoma State team that we just talked about a little bit. They're the number four seed in the Midwest region. They're going to have to get through Illinois, one of the hottest teams in the country, just to get to the Elite Eight. So a very tough path in front of Cade Cunningham and the Cowboys, but still one of the looked at as one of the top teams to win the NCAA tournament. How do we arrive at a price like this for Oklahoma State?
I think you summed it up earlier. I heard you mentioning that frankly, their seeding's wrong. And for us, you know, I've learned for a very long time, you've got to let the market tell you what prices a team should be, both in the futures and in games. And we're just seeing a constant trickle of money. It's Cade Cunningham that's bringing people in. But we're seeing nearly twice as much money for that team than what we're seeing for someone like Alabama, despite them winning the conference and being roughly the same price. So public sentiment causes that, and it seems that most people agree that they're the wrong seeding. There probably should be a three. In saying that, meeting Illinois in the Sweet 16, and, you know, Tennessee isn't going to be an easy beat in the second round. You know, even maybe there's a chance in the first round they can get beaten. So 16-1 seems short enough to me.
Jason, we mentioned the liver situation at Michigan a couple times already, but how do you handle a situation like that when you have, you know, such an important player on one of the top teams, you know, when you're setting odds, and have you seen that maybe affect the betting so far?
Look, frankly, for us, given the injury, given it's an ankle or foot, they're the ones where we're happy, you know, as a bookmaker, you're happy to take the biggest risk on. They can't win the tournament without him in our eyes. That, you know, they're no certainty. They've got a so-called easy draw game one, but they're no certainty to get through the rest of it. We're happy to be towards the top of the market and bring some money in Michigan to all of our customers in the good state.
I mean, it's as a bettor, it's a bet that I'm a little bit comfortable taking the risk on, just because of how efficient and how good they were with livers, and maybe more in a bracket pool where you're going to see so many people come off of them, especially with the popularity of the one seed. Maybe I feel a little bit better about taking them a round or two farther than I would have because of the popularity of the other ones. And maybe you get a little bit of an edge, a little bit of pot odds by trusting Michigan and hoping that livers is back. But I do understand how they are being treated and why they're being treated the way they are in the betting market. We got one more question here for you, Jason. The prop market getting rolling along. You guys at BetMGM are offering lines on which conference is going to win the national championship. Can the Big Ten finally break that 21-year drought? Which seed will win? All sorts of things like that. What sort of props are you seeing the most action coming in these first few days of betting?
On these big events, and we see it in the Super Bowl, and we're seeing it again, the early business, when you first go, it's all the chalk. Mm-hmm. Gonzaga to win their region. The number one seeds to progress to sort of Elite Eight, Sweet 16. What we start to see as the tournament gets closer, come Thursday and Friday, that's when we start to see the interesting bets. The social occasional gamblers coming in, having their $10 and $20 on something at big odds. But at the moment, we're seeing lots of solid big bets for number one seeds. We have seen a little bit of money for Texas in the state market, which state will win. Seems to be on, you know, you have Baylor, but then you sort of got Texas, Houston. Yep. You've just got the nut people like to have five teams running for them who are sort of all under 25-1. I'm probably happy to lay that as well.
Don't forget Abilene Christian. Maybe Abilene Christian goes on a little bit of a run here and gets themselves a Cinderella story in this 2021 tournament. Jason Scott, thanks so much for joining us. Going to be with us every episode here of Ding U as we take you through the NCAA championship. Jason, thanks again for being here with us today.
Thanks, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City with David, a sculptor, and his wife, Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Let's keep things rolling here, you guys. As I said, any questions you might have, please throw them in there. We are happy to take them. But for the time being, Brian and I are going to talk about some of the things that everyone is talking about this week as they're filling out their brackets. Who's getting upset? Who's that double-digit team that is going to make a Sweet 16 and Elite Eight run, something along those lines? Let's start right there, Brian. Double-digit seeds that we think are going to make a Sweet 16 run. I will check to you, speaking of gambling, and let you take this one first.
Sure. Actually, I wrote a story that ran Monday morning called Finding Cinderella on our site, and I give you five double-digit seeds to take a look at. I think we have a good chance to be that kind of Cinderella, but my number one choice going into the tournament, and especially when I saw the matchup, is Winthrop. I love Winthrop, 23-1, only lost one game all year by 2 points at home, a game they led by eight with a couple minutes left. Team that plays differently than anybody else. They play 11 or 12 guys. They bring in hockey shifts it's for their substitution patterns, 5 minutes at a time. They play super fast, top 10 pace in the country. They've got a good big man, 6'10", DJ Burns. They've got a great point guard who's 6'7", and Chandler Valdrin. They've got six triple-doubles. This is a team I really like. And then when you look at Villanova's issues with Colin Gillespie being injured, they haven't won since. I think there's going to be some issues with keeping Burns on the floor defensively against Villanova style, but I really like this Winthrop team a lot. They're very talented, used to winning, and I like them to get to the Sweet 16.
I mean, this is going to be a 12-5 that where more people are on the 12, just straight up to win. Forget about with the points. I mean, this is going to be easily the most popular 12-5 upset of this 2021 tournament. Reminds me of the 2019 tournament, the last tournament we had, where Oregon was a consensus pick over Wisconsin, and that went in Oregon's favor. You mentioned it too, right? The Villanova, no Colin Gillespie, a second round matchup with the winner of Purdue or North Texas. And again, Purdue is a very, I think, a high floor but a low ceiling team this season. So Winthrop definitely feeling like a team that can make that Sweet 16 run. I'm going to flip it over to the other side of the bracket and talk about Ohio, a team that I already mentioned a little bit here. Jason Preston. I mean, when I look for a team that is going to be an underdog in its first two games, or at least expected to be in the second game, should have pulled the upset in the first one, I want to trust a team that has a guy who can put them on his back and carry them, who can put up 30, 35 and carry them to a victory. We saw that way back at the start of the season. Jason Preston, Ohio, announced themselves with him putting up 31 in a near loss against Illinois. I mean, this is just a guy who can really carry an underdog team. And I look at the draw that Ohio has going up against a Virginia team that is dealing with its COVID issues right now. Would get the winner of Creighton and UCSB if they were able to pull the upset against Virginia. You know, Creighton is a team that can really score it, but obviously is not really going to intimidate you too much. And Ohio, I think, can match them there. UCSB, right, going to play a similar style to Creighton. So that's another one of the most anticipated 12-5 matchups in the tournament. But again, it just comes back for me to Jason Preston. If I'm going to bet on a 13 seed to go to the Sweet 16, I want them to have a true go-to player. Ohio definitely has that in Preston. So that is where I lean here. We talk now about a top five seed that we think is going to get upset in the first round. Everyone's always going to look to a 12-5. We're not necessarily talking 16-1 or 15-2 here, but we could be talking 14-3. 13-4. I put out Villanova, for all the reasons you said. You put out Virginia as one of the teams, I think, for a lot of the reasons I said. So let's put those teams to the side and talk about a couple other teams that you like here, because I'm not so sure I'm on board with these. But you've got Purdue and Creighton as teams that are in some serious upset trouble. Tell us why.
Yeah, well, Purdue, they're playing North Texas. North Texas is a team that's top 25 in defense this year. I don't know if you watched the Conference USA title game against Western Kentucky, a very talented team. It was 48-48 going into overtime. They like to really muck things up. They've got a little bit of size. They got a great closer in Javion Hamlet, who I've kind of called the Io DeSumo Jr. He's smaller, but he was the Conference USA Player of the Year last year and got edged out for that this year by Charles Bassey, but he closed that game out. He has no fear. And we mentioned Purdue. Purdue, again, I think you're right. High floor, low ceiling. Very, very young team. You know, they do have Travion Williams, who has a little bit of experience, and he's a load down there. But North Texas has a guy who's 6'10", 250, I think could at least, bang around with him a little bit down there. And then with Creighton, I really like this UCSB team, the Santa Barbara. They have high major talent. All five of their starters either started their career at a high major program or four-star recruits. So they really have more talent than you usually see, especially from a team out of the Big West. Creighton coming off that really bad blowout loss against Georgetown. You wonder where their heads are. And again, they Santa Barbara has some size, good rebounding team. Got a 6'10 stretch four, Miles Norris, 6'9 all-conference post player inside. And Creighton is not a really physical team. So I do like Creighton, but I think that that is a possible upset to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be another very fun one, another very popular one. You've got KenPom calling for a 7-point victory for Creighton, but that's going to that's just got the signature of a game that the underdog could end up sticking around and playing the sort of pace that the favorite wants to play. And if that ends up being the case, we could be looking at another 12-5 upset, the hallmark of the NCAA tournament. Finally here, let's talk about a top three seed that we don't think is going to make it to the second weekend. So we're not necessarily saying that this is going to be a first round loss, but a team that isn't going to be playing in the Sweet 16. I'll take this one first. I think Houston is in some serious trouble here, Brian. I look mostly at that second round matchup. I like that to be Rutgers against Houston, and Rutgers just with what happened with this team last year, they were going to break this huge drought that this program has had for so long and finally make the tournament. Then the tournament doesn't happen, a huge disappointment for teams like Rutgers, like San Diego State, like Dayton that were going to have a chance at a special season last year. They come back this year and Rutgers, maybe not quite the ceiling that it had a season ago, but I think still a very dangerous team. I think they match up well with Clemson in the first round. I think they, probably bring maybe the best player to the floor in the game. And I think that they could give Houston a lot of trouble in a potential second round matchup. So I think Houston goes down and, I'm not totally sleeping on Cleveland State against Houston. This is a team that has won a ton of games this season. Very good coming out of the Horizon League. They also have plenty of experience on that team and guys who can take over the game. So I think that, I'm not going to sit here and say Cleveland State over Houston, book it, let's go. Let's take that 20-point underdog to win straight up. But I think Houston might have its handful a little bit more than Cleveland State is getting credit for. I think that's a dangerous 15-2, and we have seen plenty of dangerous 15-2s in the past. But then moving on to the second round, I think Rutgers is the team that ends up coming out of that pod and moving on to the Sweet 16. So Houston, a team that I am fading. What's one that you're fading?
Well, you're giving Indiana fans flashbacks with that Cleveland State upset pick. That's a pretty bold one. I like that. I like most of the top three seeds in this tournament. I think we're going to see a lot of them make it to the second weekend. So I'm going to hedge my bets a little bit with Kansas. Kansas, another one of those teams that's having COVID issues, had to pull out of the Big 12 tournament. David McCormack wasn't going to play in the tournament, even if they'd been able to stay in that tournament. Mm-hmm. Don't know his status. Don't know the status of really anyone on the team at this point, where they're going to be when they suit up. I still think they'll get past Eastern Washington, although that's a pretty good team, a good coach, Ashante Lagans, who's a really rising coach. But I think they'll get through that one. But then you start to look at some of the second-round matchups that are possible. If Drake gets there, then I don't think Kansas is going to lose to Drake. But they could play Wichita State, and that is an absolute holy war for Wichita State to be able to play Kansas. And I think they would be so fired up for that. We saw what happened last time that happened. And then you have USC, another potential second-round matchup. Mm-hmm. Evan Mobley would be just really difficult for Kansas to contain, as well as Dave McCormack played down the stretch. He's still not super mobile, I don't think. And a guy like Evan Mobley could really make life difficult on him. So when you combine what Kansas has going on in its own camp versus some of the teams it could play, and the fact that I think although Kansas played better, I don't think this is a supremely talented team. So that's my pick for a top three seed to go down.
Yeah, Evan Mobley, that would be – I mean, that's a load for any team to handle, and Kansas would not be alone in that if they were to struggle with him and USC, if that is indeed a second-round matchup. We've got a Kansas expert coming on here in just a couple of minutes. We're going to have to run that idea by him. All right, let's move on from that. Let's get to that aforementioned Kansas expert. We've got a couple of our athletic college basketball colleagues joining us on the show today. First up is CJ Moore. CJ, of course, covers Kansas for us here at The Athletic. CJ, also very close and knowledgeable about all the teams in the Big 12. CJ, thanks for joining us today. Let me say, before we get going, before we ask you our first question for you, I want to let you know that when we were preparing the show, Brian was crowing to me about winning your against the spread picks pool this season. The two of you and Seth Davis, Brian was patting himself on the back, saying that he was the winner there. So just want to let you know what's going on behind your back.
Yeah, it's like beating a bunch of slow kids in a race.
Yeah, I only finished at 52%, so it's not that much to brag about.
Yeah, I think I was a couple games below 500, so So it wasn't a great showing. So what better guest to have on a gambling show than a guy?
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. You got to love that. Let's talk about Baylor here, CJ, a team you know very well, a team that is obviously among the favorites to win the championship. If they do end up getting tripped up before the Final Four, where do you see it happening? Where's the biggest hurdle for them between right now and getting to the Final Four?
Oh, man, I think, you know, I don't think the second round is that tough. Like, I think there's tougher 8-9 teams out there. I'm just going to start off right away because I don't see you throwing any shade in the Big Ten. from what I've been listening to so far, it just sounds like all kinds of Big Ten homerism. So I don't think, you know, North Carolina or Wisconsin's too troublesome for them. Mm. I actually think, you know, the 4-5 seeds are manageable there with Purdue, and obviously Villanova is not the Villanova that we know. So I think, you know, the biggest hurdle for Baylor getting to a Final Four will probably be whoever the Bears end up playing in the Elite Eight, if you know they get there. And you know, Ohio State would be a tough matchup, but I think, you know, basically Arkansas obviously has been hot, but I honestly feel like, you know, with both Gonzaga and Baylor, the committee did them some favors in terms of and how, you know, how their brackets lined up. I don't think that there's like any opponent that's really, really a terrible matchup. Purdue could be tough because you saw David McCormick have success against them in their first loss this season. Trevion Williams is maybe a guy that could give them problems. They don't, you know, Baylor has length and big guys, but they don't have like a monster in the post. So maybe that's it. Although I do love my boy Jonathan Chuma-Chachua. I think I got it right there.
Nailed it.
What a story on him, but I can't say his name.
We'll leave that pronunciation to you for sure. CJ, I want to ask you about a team you probably don't know a whole lot about, and that is Kansas. They obviously reinvented themselves in the second half of the season, but had to pull out of the Big 12 tournament. I just picked them as a top three seed. I thought might lose before the second weekend just because their second round matchup could be pretty difficult. But what are your expectations for Kansas, knowing what you know about where they are at this point?
Man, it's going to be tough to see how that all plays out because, you know, I think they will have David McCormick back, which will be big for them because, you know, they play through him a ton. I mean, he is a very high usage player. You know, one of the players they're going to have out, I don't think it's any secret if you check Twitter. You can find out who that is, a starter. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it based on how we handle COVID at the Athletic, but you know, it's going to be a challenge just because you know, Brian, you hit it on the nail where you said that, you know, they're not as talented as they usually are at KU. But I will say the one time when you usually are doubting Bill Self is the time that he usually comes through. Yeah. So, you know, I think KU's got a decent shot to get to the second weekend, but in that USC game, even if KU's got a full roster, like USC's higher ranked than them at KenPom, so KU's, you know, is probably going to be an underdog if the game against USC ends up happening.
Correct me if I'm wrong, CJ, but one of the biggest upsets in Kansas history was a 14-3 game, right, with Bucknell. That was a 14-3 matchup, yeah. I believe, all those years ago. So maybe some tough memories for Kansas fans being on the three line. We've talked about Oklahoma State a ton, but I think they're, you know, one of, if not the most interesting team in the tournament because of how they come into this year, because of Cade Cunningham, because of the fact that they were maybe the most underseeded team in the field and are now staring down a potential Sweet 16 matchup with arguably the hottest team in the country in Illinois. So let's fast forward to that matchup happening with something we all want to see. How did Cade and the Cowboys take down Io in the Illini?
Illinois is so hot right now, but I think that, you know, Cade is a guy that just – he does anything to win. Right. Like I keep getting these as they were playing in the Big 12 tournament, I kept getting texts from coaches like, man, guy's so poised, such a winner, stuff like that. Like he just rises to the occasion. He hits big shots. He can kind of like, no matter how you play him in the pick and roll, he can manipulate that coverage and find his guys. And I don't think the team has gotten any better from November to now than Oklahoma State. So how they beat Illinois? Well, they like to switch up their defenses. You know, they could throw some zone at them. You know, Illinois is so good at getting into the paint and playing through Kofi and you know, getting Iowa good to go downhill. So maybe they're able to kind of keep them out of the paint, make them make perimeter shots, which they're a good perimeter shooting team. But in the tournament, you never know. In 40 minutes, you can go cold really easily.
CJ, I am all in on this Texas team. Love them. They're my dark horse national title contender, even though that horse is not really all that dark after winning the Big 12 title. But I think people know all about them at this point. But is there another Big 12 team that maybe people aren't talking about at all? I mean, there were seven great teams out of that league. Was there another one who could maybe make a run in this league, in this tournament? Excuse me.
Yeah, I'm with you on Texas. I mean, that's one of my final four picks. I can't quit that team. I've been high on them all year. I think that's a top five roster in college basketball. So I think you're onto something there. Maybe Texas Tech, like Chris Beard, we've seen him roll through this tournament before. You know, they don't have the same kind of roster that they had that made the national championship game a few years ago. And, you know, I think what they're missing is like an elite rim protector, but the offense is, you know, you could argue the offense is maybe a tinge better than that team was. And Mac McClung is like about as exciting as any player to watch in college basketball. Like when stuff gets crazy, Mac McClung thrives. So late in games, you could see him. You know, they had a late rally. Who was it against? Who was their SEC? It was LSU. I don't know if people saw that game this year, but like that was one of the craziest rallies you'll ever see. So Texas Tech, you could see them going around. That's a staff that I think does a really, really good job preparing in a small window. So maybe the Red Raiders, that team, I don't know. I feel like everybody else in the Big 12 is getting talked about other than Oklahoma, and I don't like OU's chances as much against Gonzaga. So
no, probably if they get past Missouri, probably not going to be the team that takes down the Zags. And hey, Texas Tech +800 to win that South region, the third best odds, better than the 3, 4, and 5 seats in their own region. So putting some faith certainly in Chris Beard's history, Mac McClung, and what the Red Raiders might be able to do over the next couple of weeks. CJ Moore, he'll be with us all throughout DingU, and you can follow his work, of course, at The Athletic. Check him out on Twitter at CJ Moore Hoops. CJ, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, fellas. Had fun.
Thanks, CJ.
All right, one more Athletic writer joining the show here this afternoon. It is Eamon Brennan. Eamon, very close to all things college basketball, including, of course, the bubble. And we're going to ask him certain things about that and how those bubble teams might be dangerous over the next couple of weeks. But Eamon, first place I want to start with you is with the Virginia Cavaliers, another team, like we just talked about with Kansas, that is dealing with some COVID issues, had to pull out of the ACC tournament last week. Where do things stand with Virginia as they are getting ready for a first round matchup with Ohio?
Yeah, I mean, I think they stand where they stood on Sunday night when Virginia had a press conference and Tony Bennett sort of talked about their plan, which was to kind of play things by or take things a day at a time. Try and get everybody fully, you know, quarantined and tested and cleared, and then get down on Friday to Indianapolis. So whether they'll have practice time, whether they'll have the ability to walk through, you know, in the gym, seems unlikely. It's a very sort of, without making light of COVID and the seriousness of protocols and all that good stuff, it feels a little bit like an AAU team, knowing that they have a tournament at the weekend, but, you know, one or two of the players also have a soccer tournament that weekend. So they're trying to figure out whether or not everybody's going to go. And they may show up late. It's that sort of level of logistical certainty at this point. So yeah, it's not an ideal situation. Now, I don't know. I don't think we have even as much certainty as sort of the Kansas situation, which I heard you guys talking about in the previous segment a little bit, in terms of guys that, you know, tested positive that weren't available for conference tournaments, that whole thing, because once Virginia popped a positive test, they just shut down and the ACC, you know, they were out of the tournament without any sort of announcements about players not being available, that sort of thing. So there still isn't even that much certainty as to whether the player who tested positive, who apparently, according to reporting, played against Syracuse the day before, is going to be available for the tournament, or whether they're, you know, the whole roster is available. All that stuff is still up in the air. So that said, there's a possibility that a full-strength Virginia appears this weekend at the NCAA tournament. There's also a possibility that it's not a full strength, and either way, it doesn't seem like they're going to have the normal preparation that you'd like to have for a tournament, regardless of who's available.
Eamon is the best bubble watcher in the country by far, and he's the only other guy that I know for sure was up watching Colorado State, Utah State at 3 a.m. with me the other day. But of all the work you did on these bubble teams, now that the, you know, the ones have gotten in, is there one that you look at that you think maybe can actually make a run that it's gotten in now?
I mean, the obvious one, I think there are a couple obvious ones. The first one is Michigan State. Because it's Michigan State, it's Tom Izzo. I think if you look at wins above expectation in the NCAA tournament for the past 20 years, I think he's tops. So that kind of aligns with everybody's sort of semi-cliched, but very real understanding of what Tom Izzo's teams are all about, particularly this time of year. And putting them in the first four is especially interesting because we see first four teams every year. It's a little different this year, but we see first four teams every year playing a game, getting a game into their legs early, playing again two nights later, they win that. And then all of a sudden they're a win away from the second weekend. And I think we've had ever since the first four started, at least one of those teams has made the Sweet 16. So that sounds like Michigan State to me, right? Like it just, particularly given the way they played down the stretch to get themselves into the tournament, to beat three top five teams in a matter of a couple weeks. That's an obvious one that I think, probably most even casual college basketball fans don't need me to name. Another one that's semi-obvious is Syracuse. And I think you and I had roughly similar conceptions about Syracuse's ability to get into the tournament. I was maybe a little bit higher on them vis-a-vis Louisville than you were, but it was really close. And there was really sort of both of those resumes you could see being like, blah, like the committee just throwing both of them out at the end of the day if someone else had emerged or if another bid had been stolen. Cincinnati had won the American Conference tournament. You could have seen Syracuse being the last team not to get in. But given all that, their resume, I think right now, is worse than they actually are on the floor. Buddy Boeheim has gotten really hot. He is a legitimate, sort of big time stretch wing scorer at this point in his career, which is not something I ever expected to say about Buddy Boeheim. But he's really good. He was really good against Virginia, which is a really good defensive team. It's worth remembering before Virginia shut down and Duke shut down and all that stuff, that noon game against Virginia in the ACC tournament, Syracuse took them to the wire, and Virginia needed a buzzer beater at the last second from Reese Beekman to advance. So I think Syracuse right now is playing really well. I think Jim Boeheim has figured out sort of his best rotations and his best looks. They're not a good team, but we've seen, again, time and again in the NCAA tournament, that Syracuse zone can give people a lot of trouble. It's one thing to see it in your league twice a year and to have a pretty good understanding of it. It's another to have seen nothing like it all year and trying to prepare for it on two nights' notice, particularly, is really, really difficult. So that's another really, right on the bubble team that I think is a team that could give, depending on San Diego State, could give people some issues further in the bracket.
Yep, San Diego State preparing for that 2-3 zone as we speak. And then if seeds hold, it would be West Virginia potentially getting Syracuse in the second round. I want to ask you about another bubble team right in your backyard. How about Georgetown, a team that was, they weren't really a bubble team because right. They needed to win the Big East tournament to get into the tournament. They beat Villanova without Colin Gillespie. They end Seton Hall season. They just roll right over Creighton in the Big East championship. And here they are, dancing once again. What's your read on Georgetown going into the big dance?
Yeah, my read on them all year was that I sort of completely ignored them in a lot of ways because it was just like, even being this close in DC was like, okay, well, they're not going to be very good. It's a rebuilding year. Wrote about them a bunch in the offseason, wrote about them a little bit early on in the year, but it was just sort of a write-off year in a lot of ways. I mean, he put together a roster after losing so many players last season from a team that was probably going to make the NCAA tournament before everything fell apart. Had 9 new guys this year. Kudus Wahab was really the one player you look at and say, that's a guy you can build around for the future. Some seniors and Jamarco Pickett and Javon Blair kind of leftovers and not to be too rude about it, but that's kind of what they were. They were bench guys before the roster fell apart last season. And they both ended up playing like 40 minutes a game down the stretch because they basically had 5 available players. He kind of pieced together, like Chudy Bile, a guy from, way off the radar down in the lower reaches of Division I, who's been really good. Dante Harris from Arkansas, sort of a transfer who did not have a good season last year and then is looking like, mini Allen Iverson in the Garden. I mean, it's been a totally surprising turn of events. I will say they did play well down the stretch. They did get better this season. They weren't like, it's not like they were ranked 151st in KenPom or something, showed up at the Big East tournament and then won four games completely out of nowhere. You know, they won 4 of 6 down the stretch. They beat Seton Hall, beat Xavier, kind of helped kill those teams at large bids before stealing a bid in the NCAA tournament. And yeah, they've been guarding really, really well. I mean, defensively, they were great against Creighton and everyone took notice of that, but they were really good the day before against Seton Hall. I think they have a chance to really give Colorado some issues because I've watched Colorado a fair amount this year, particularly with Bubble Watch and staying up late for those Pac-12 games on the West Coast. And I like Colorado a lot. If they're moving the ball, McKinley Wright's running at people, they're getting open shots, corner threes, all that good stuff. They're a really, really good offensive team. But if they get bogged down, they don't have a whole lot on the back line or on the other end of the floor to stop you. And I think if Georgetown could just make it ugly, bog them down, you know, get into McKinley Wright, play over on screens with him, give him a hard time, like make the game ugly, play it in the 50s, the low 60s, Georgetown absolutely has a chance to win.
Even you have, I think, Alabama coming out of the East region. I love that team. Love Nate Oates. Love the style they play. But my question is, have any concerns with that style of play in March, especially the pace? We get these long timeouts, these commercials and replay reviews and teams that want to really bog them down. Does that concern you at all going into March at a style like this?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to that. I think my biggest thing with Alabama is just defense. I think it's incredibly impressive and has been all year. You know, we sort of starting off with Alabama this year and writing the power rankings every week, which I did, and they sort of being like, oh, Alabama's good. And them getting in sort of in January or whatever, it was like, wow, look at this fast offensive team that shoots a ton of threes and no mid-range jumpers and free throws and layups. And they're like the James Harden of college basketball teams. Isn't this crazy? Yep. And then you get midway through the conference season and they're not doing that. I mean, they're still playing that way on the offensive end and they still want to run, but what their real strength was is not offense. They're a pretty decent offensive team in the SEC. I mean, they were the second best, but they weren't, you know, I think they're 1.06 points per possession, something like that. That's good, but it's not amazing. Like, consider Gonzaga is like 1.3 or something in the West Coast Conference. It's a totally different ballgame, but they're the best defensive team in the SEC, despite playing that fast. I think that's what gives me a bit of reassurance about their sort of baseline, their foundation as whatever happens in the tournament, like we said with Georgetown, things get bogged down, they can still get stops on one end of the floor. I think we saw that in the SEC title game with LSU. They won it on a stop. It's a team that gets stops over and over again and that still plays fast and puts you under pressure on the other end. I agree with you. I love that team. I love the style. Have all year, but have been especially impressed with how well they're able to play defense while still playing at their pace.
Yeah, playing exactly like James Harden might not be the best way to win a championship, as we've seen.
Yeah, well, they don't play defense like James Harden. Let's put it that way. That's
right. James Harden offense with a little bit better of showing on the other end of the floor. That's Eamon Brenning, a great show in here on this episode of Ding U. Eamon, thanks again for joining us today. We'll be talking to you throughout this year, so enjoy the tournament, my friend.
Looking forward to it. You guys as well.
Thanks, Eamon.
All right, we are just about wrapping up this debut episode of Ding U, and what better way to do it than with a look at my and Brian's Final Four and national championship picks. I wish mine was a little bit more fun. I'm going to let you go first here, though. Brian, walk us through your Final Four and your national champion.
Yeah, it's not super exciting either, but I just think that the top seeds are really – distinguished themselves and separated themselves this year. And obviously Gonzaga, I love them in the Final Four. Baylor, I think they've got a good draw. Illinois is playing better as well as anybody in the country. And then I mentioned my love for Texas, and I think they've got a pretty good shot of coming out of the East as well. So that's my Final Four. 3 1s and a 3, not super exciting again, but I love these one seeds this year. We got Gonzaga over Baylor. I mean, those have been the two teams all year long. Baylor's dipped a little bit here lately. Their defense hasn't been quite as good, but get them out of the Big 12. Playing some different teams that have to really deal with that. I think this is the game we all wanted to see, a couple weeks ago, and I'd still love to see it. So that's my pick.
Yeah, when we were talking to Jason Scott from BetMGM earlier and asking him about props, I was hoping he was going to bring up the number of one seeds to make the Final Four prop, because right now over 2.5 one seeds to make the Final Four is sitting at +330. And you know, we don't see it very often. There's a reason why that's +330, even as good as the one seeds are this season. But I'm with you. I like that a lot this season. I've got it just a little bit different than you do. I just don't see it. Like, we have watched so much Gonzaga and so much Baylor this season that any argument against them making the Final Four requires you to do some mental gymnastics. And, you know, Gonzaga has, I think, the cleanest path to the Final Four of any team in the tournament. You know, no offense to Ohio State, a very good team. Could they beat Baylor? Of course they could beat Baylor in the Elite Eight, but, you know, Baylor just such a diverse offense and, you know, such great athleticism, such great guard play. We know how important that is. A team that was right here, ready to do something similar a year ago, brings back most of that team and is doing it again this year. I just really don't see any team getting in either of their way. I'm riding the Cade Cunningham train in the Midwest. I hate to take Illinois out here with the way that they're playing and maybe one of the best inside-outside duos in Ayo Dosunmu and Kofi Coburn, but I want to differentiate a little bit, and I think Oklahoma State is a good way to do that. We've talked so much in this show about how they are underseeded. This is really more a three seed rather than a four. I hate that this is a Sweet 16 matchup that we're probably looking at, but I will ride with Oklahoma State to come out of the Midwest. And then I've been sort of hinting at it all episode. I just think that if and when Isaiah Livers is back, you know, Michigan is back to being the team that put themselves in a group with Gonzaga and Baylor for so long, for, you know, December, January, even until February. We were thinking, you know, this is Gonzaga, Baylor, and everyone else. And then for a stretch there before Michigan had its COVID shutdown, we talked about them as making this a three-team group at the top of the country. And I think that with Livers back, they would deserve to be in that group as well. So I will go with that as the Final Four, and then I'm with you. It's chalky. It's boring. I wish I could throw a seven seed and a five seed in here, but I just don't see how Gonzaga and Baylor get slowed down or get stopped by anyone other than Gonzaga or Baylor. And Gonzaga, just, I've watched a ton of them this season. I think we all have. And you know, there's really no doubting that when they bring their A game, there's really no playing with them. They can bring their B minus game and still beat some of the best teams in the country. So I think it'll be Gonzaga going 32-0, being the first team since 1976 Indiana to go undefeated, wire to wire, number one team in the country this season. And that's where things stand in our Final Four and our national championship game. And that's where things stand. That's where things end for this first episode of Ding U. To all of you out there who tuned in, thank you so much. As I said, we're going to be doing this all tournament long. We'll be with you again tomorrow, taking a look at the first four, and then again on Thursday, taking a look at the first round games. Thank you to Jason Scott from BetMGM, CJ Moore, and Eamon Brennan for joining us on this episode. And Mike Zimmerman behind the scenes, our producer, thank you as well. Brian, this was fun. We got our feet wet, but we're just getting started here. Plenty more to go.
Can't wait. I still can't believe you only have one Big Ten team in your Final Four. But
don't listen. We've gone long enough. Don't get me started on what this disaster of a Wisconsin season was this year. I could make this another hour long if we got on that train. So I'm just going to leave it there. Thank you, everyone, for watching us here on Ding U. If you are just tuning in at the end, you missed it. Good news. This will be running as a podcast as well on the Daily Ding feed. So check us out there as well. We'll be with you tomorrow. Enjoy filling out those brackets.